Welcome to another episode of the Thrive Kombucha Podcast. I'm Elijah, the founder of Thrive Brew Kombucha Co., an up-and-coming kombucha brewery in downtown Lexington, Kentucky. At Thrive Brew, our mission is to brew clean, crushable kombucha to nourish you to thrive. This podcast is simply an extension of that mission where we reflect and share the ins and outs of the journey it's been building out a nourished kombucha community. If you find any value or enjoyment from this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you would leave a rating and a review on the platform you are listening to. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes that promote our favorite fermented beverage. Cheers. What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode. Today, we're going to be talking all about how we make our kombucha and what differentiations we're most proud of and other stuff like that. What's going on, guys?
Guys,
we got a reemergence, the brewmaster himself.
Are you a velociraptor?
That was an eagle scream.
Oh. That was actually perfect.
The Texas Eagle is back.
Oh. The kombucha cowboy himself.
The Texas cowboy eagle guy.
Yeehaw.
Welcome back, T-Ray. What's up, bro?
Nothing.
T-Ray? That was Trey Bang.
It is. Depending on the day, the mood.
I didn't know Trey and I shared so many names together.
You guys did have to have the same first letters.
Yeah.
First three letters.
Most important ones.
Yep. It's all my name.
Your name is all just three letters. That's right.
Yep. Well, welcome back. We got Trey back on here because this topic definitely lends itself to having our brewmaster speaking the truth out here on the interwebs, on the podcast world.
That makes me wonder, Trey, do you prefer brewmaster or head brewer?
I don't prefer head brewer.
You
because
don't?
I'm the only one here that brews anything. The only thing I see brewed here from you two is little cups of tea.
That's true.
We do many unfermented batches.
That's right.
Which Trey's always good on every social media post that I do on the back DMs. He always tags it with, it'd be better fermented.
No matter what it is.
No matter what it is. Yep. If it's my little girl, they
exactly
better fermented.
It.
Yep.
Anyhow, this is a good topic. It's going to be, it's something where we can kind of get into a little of the nitty gritty of certain things that we prioritize in our process and our ideals, how those have morphed over time, things that are non-negotiables, and things that maybe you should think about when you're thinking about the kombucha brews that you're drinking.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Ponder. Is there any particular reason you guys can think of that a customer or consumer would think about how their kombucha is particularly brewed?
Well,
or created?
The thing is whenever there's a specifically in the health and wellness, which kombucha is in the health and wellness sphere, we're trying to add a little bit more nuance, style, different flair than just that space, even though that's kind of like our starting line. That's our starting point. But whenever there's a new craze, which kombucha is hot right now, there's always going to be big dog players swooping in to make a buck. And so with no label transparency that's required on a lot of this stuff, what we'd like to say around here is not every kombucha is created equal, even though they're all priced kind of equally.
Equal-ish.
Yeah, equal-ish.
And all called kombucha.
And that's the only word that we have. There's no different... there's no language. There's no certifications. There's nothing that differentiates some like private labeled, just some company that just private labels a kombucha made God knows where and God knows how, with God knows what ingredients, and compared to people like craft artisan brewers like ourselves that painstakingly go through a lot different process than those types of things. Not to say those are bad necessarily. It's just like when you see a $2.50 product on the shelf, there's a reason for it usually. And when you see a $4 kombucha, there's a reason for it, hopefully.
Except for that one like $7 kombucha he brought one time from
oh my gosh,
Michigan
oh my
or something.
Goodness.
That was trash.
It was honestly juice. It was honestly in the top three worst I've ever had. Maybe not. That's a little rough.
I think the price puts it in top three.
Well, that's
three
what I was saying. Outside of price,
alone. It
was in the top 10 tier of worst ones. And it was the most expensive one to date that I've ever purchased. So, yeah, that was pretty sad.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyhow, let's dive in, boys.
Okay. Why do we care about making our kombucha differently than other producers? We've learned quite a bit about how other people have done it. Why have we decided to go our particular route?
I'd like to rephrase that question just a tick.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking of why do we do it differently than other people, it's more so we do it in a particular way. And we're proud of that particular way that we do it. Rather than we never looked to other people to decide, oh, we're not going to do that. We should do that. It's more so we've realized throughout time the differentiators in the process, but they were never a thing that these people do this, so we're going to do this.
Well, let me change it then.
Okay.
We already had a process. How has learning the way other people produce, how has that affected our outlook on our specific process?
A lot of ways. Great question. A process as you scale up, which we're going to talk a little bit more about later, but that's a big one. We've learned and gained a lot of information from a lot of people on that. That's in the process side. In the branding side, I've definitely looked to inspiration from other people and made the branding of our product now really align with the vibe we're trying to chase. So from a branding perspective, a lot of things have changed that align with our mission, goals, ideals, blah, blah, blah. So there's a few of the ways.
What about like our actual process as far as learning how they make their kombucha and the effect that had on how we make ours, or with how that made us feel about ours or adjust ours in any way? Have there been any adjustments or any changes after learning about how another producer made stuff?
Yes.
Go for it.
We had a... Well, it was
you can be a little quiet about... Well, I mean, they did it publicly. It's no longer available, but...
I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
Okay.
Well, then let's go. Let's find out.
Well, there was a time where we made kombucha really strong.
Oh, okay.
Where
I know where you're going.
The typical kombucha drinker, like, or probably more even the more hardcore kombucha drinker would love it.
And well, every person from like Oregon and Northern California that came through was like, this is the best kombucha I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. And we just had we got some constructive criticism about our kombucha from somebody that was a brewer and kind of did some soul searching and realizing we had like 80 different standards we're going for. And the average person cares about three of them, maybe. That's exaggeration. But,
yeah,
you know, it was like a moment where you're like, you know, let's just make the kombucha less acidic, like a lot less acidic.
In the end, that was the basic.
Yeah. I mean, it's still very boochy. Don't get me wrong. But making it more crushable, which is one of our things.
Well, and it's more like chasing the like soft, full vinegar than like the harsh vinegar.
Yeah.
Like that's because a lot of times when people say make it less acidic, it makes you think like something, some weak sauce, some booch. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's like more so chasing that smooth, full acid rather than that little bite the back of your throat and the back of your jaw type of acid.
Right.
Mm.
So that you can drink a lot of in a day rather than just like
crushable
one. I mean, I drink like, I take cans home all the time and I drink, I'm going to take a 24 pack of extra cans home of the wasted ones from canning today. I'm probably going to drink most of them this weekend.
In all fairness, though, you used to drink the starter back then, too. So,
but even then, I wasn't drinking that much of our regular stuff in a day.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's pretty dang crushable nowadays. We decided there's a few. Yeah, like Trey said, we had some constructive criticism from a few people. We took our humble pie and put a couple ideals out there, the things that were most important, the things that we wanted, what problems we wanted our products to solve, what value we really wanted to add, and then we chased those things. We wanted something that was clean ingredients that we could be really, really proud of. We wanted something that was clean drinkability, not so yeasty and kind of like thickish. Wanted something a little more clean in taste profile. And we wanted it to be crushable. We wanted it to be something that if you're anywhere into kombucha, you're just going to want to crush this bad boy. But not back overload it, like not make that crushable by like back overloading sugar or, you know, artificial sweeteners or weird stuff like that, but just in the taste profile, crushable. And then, but we didn't want to hide what we were doing by just like taking the acid to a point that it's not even recognizable as kombucha. There's all the health properties that the word kombucha connotates would be gone. We wanted it to be traditional kombucha in that regard. So those are things that we decided to chase, and it's never been better.
In the earlier days, why was the high acidity experience so important?
Well, one of the big reasons is when you're thinking about it from a strictly health perspective, when you're just thinking health, those high acids, that's where a lot of the benefits lie in kombucha. But you soon realize that the people that want that high, like the few people that want that high acid level, you can easily get it from like apple cider vinegar. And you can just dilute that. So what we decided is we wanted a clean, crushable drinking experience with all these ideals. So it was kind of like, let's dial that back a little bit. Not make it not kombucha, but just dial that acid back a little bit to make it an enjoyable beverage experience outside of just like an acid experience, you know.
Gotcha.
That's the broad.
Do you want to add anything to that?
Nope.
Cool. All right. So that's us kind of talking about what the front end of the experience is.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the back end side.
Let's do it.
Of the production differentiators. So not just the aims that we have, but also how we achieve those aims.
Mm.
So you had already mentioned some of the big dogs. They'll approach it with the intention of making a buck.
Yep.
And there's a reason why they're able to price it a specific way. Do you want to say anything about the production side of what that looks like, or give a brief indicator of what some of those conflicts might be, or what might lead to that price being so low?
Yeah. Let me just give like the 1 to 3 minute quick production overview of how we create things and throw stuff in there along the way if I miss things, Trey. And then I'll juxtapose that with what a lot of dogs are doing. This will be the quick overview. We'll have future episodes on each one of the parts of these processes and why we go deep on them. It starts by brewing whole loose leaf fair trade tea. That's an ideal to us. Is that we want to know that people on the other side of the raw materials we're using are well taken care of. We work with a great tea company. We use raw organic cane sugar. We use reverse osmosis water with back added mineralization to the perfect levels. All that alone, I'm not even going to comment on it. I'm just going to tell you what we do. Those three things. Then we add an in-house created and now at this point eight-plus-year-old culture that's still going, that we handle in-house, that every part of it has been handled by us. We craft that culture over time, feeding it in the ways that it needs it at the different times, during the different literal seasons of the year, throughout all the blah, blah, blah. We then create batches with in-house, fresh-pressed, organic produce, herbs, things of this sort, that we literally in-house press, craft, create ourselves. We then let those, I mean, let alone the fermentation on the starter culture, it takes weeks on end. I mean, if not months, to curate to the right levels. So that's months of time. Then we let our batches go through, like our flavored batches, go through an additional fermentation process to extract the flavors out of the tea, the juices, the herbs. We let it go through a fermentation process. Then we in-house chill, carbonate, and do all of our packaging right here inside our own facility. Then take it to our distribution partners and do all our own sales out in the field, making personal interactions with the people that we are selling the products to and that are consuming the products. That's like a rough overview. Ain't miss anything?
No, you got it all.
I mean, we could double down on all of those and talk for an entire hour on each one
of
those subjects.
The only thing I would add is we clean the shop ourselves. So,
unfortunately, except for Aspen.
She did a pretty crappy job.
She didn't do very good.
How dare you? How dare you?
All she did.
Aspen's my little girl.
All she did was use a spray bottle. She didn't even wipe it down.
Yeah.
She was cute.
Mm-hmm. Is that all it takes?
Well, I came in today and there's a lot left undone.
If you guys looked half that cute while you were cleaning, it wouldn't really matter how good of a job you did.
Yeah, but how much do you pay Aspen to be cute?
A lot.
Do you?
The amount of money that goes into that little girl.
That's to keep her alive, not because she's cute.
Anyhow, that
helps though.
That's it. It definitely helps. That's a quick overview of our process. Now, let me build one of many scenarios juxtaposed to that process. A company that has no brewery, has no space of their own, they exist in an office, that makes phone calls and writes emails to people, orders things to other locations, for other people to do all the process. So there's no face to the product. No one knows where the ingredients came from. No one knows what kind of tea is being used. No one has any backstory on how things are crafted. There's no in-house formulated culture. There's purchased dead, and when I mean dead, pasteurized.
What does pasteurized mean for people that
heated,
don't know?
Heated to where all the living organisms inside the, it's hard to call it kombucha, the acid, I'm going to just leave it at acid, is dead. To where there's no fermentation process. There's just brewed tea. Definitely not in-house cold pressed juices. There's ordered in pasteurized purees, additives, other strange things. that are added into a tank. Water that there's no claims of, there's who knows what the water is. It's probably, I guarantee it's not reverse osmosis water with correct levels of mineralization. There's none of that. To where this dead acid is added into the tank, immediately chilled, carbonated, packaged, and put on a shelf for beautiful $2.50 to $3. And there is a whole host of large companies out there that employ that. There are some larger companies that do not employ that and actually do fermentation. But there's a plethora of people that do it in the manner that we just said. And it's not only big companies. There's a lot of smaller companies because of the accessibility of this method that are now being lured by, oh, look at the, they get lured away from the art and love of fermentation and beverage crafting experiences.
And find the art and love of money.
No, but you're exactly right. They find, they look at the, when you were looking at things on paper, there are things that you can do at every corner to make your bottom line better. And when you're, there's no passion connected, there's no faces connected to the product, then that's all they're in it for.
And they go from telling you they want to open a kombucha business to suddenly they're brewing hundreds of gallons the next month, and you're like, yeah, okay, kombucha business, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sad that that word is able to be used for operations like that. But yeah, there's a vast majority of those things grow on. But what we like to say, not all kombucha is created equal. I gave you a quick breakdown of our process, and literally anything that comes out of our doors, Trevor, Trey, or Elijah's hands have touched it and crafted it and watched over it and tested it and quality controlled it and watched over the fermentation times.
Unless it sucks, then it was just Elijah.
Right? That's actually pretty true.
It has been from a long time ago.
Yeah. So that's a quick overview of what it can look like differently. There, to say a couple of the other things, just to double down, there, just to show you like one area where so much cost savings can happen, is moving from fresh pressed juices to pre-pasteurized fruit purees in bags, show up in bags, is such an incredible cost savings on the raw material and labor side that I understand why most companies do it. Because, I mean, on paper, if you're just looking at it on paper, it's just night and day difference, because the labeling on the actual packaging can still be organic dragon fruit, organic pineapple. And from a consumer's standpoint, that can trick you to thinking this is the same pineapple that's in this over here. But there is such a difference in those two things, and the enzymes, the nutrient levels, the overall taste profile, all of it. There's such a difference in it that with taste, you would be able to see, as a consumer, you would be, if you ever side by side, you'd know it right away. I mean, it's so unmistakable. But on just packaging, when you see something for $3 and you see something for $4.25 and they both say organic pineapple, it's like you can easily just think that's the same thing, but it's definitely not most times. And so that's something that's an ideal for us. We've been committed to fresh pressed in-house whole produce that goes, that gets pressed or processed or extracted non-pasteurized into the kombucha, and let the kombucha be the natural preserver of the product. Preserver, and what I would say, thing that unlocks the magic out of those things, the art of fermentation. So there you go. That's just one way of how it's so differentiated.
So that kind of plays into some of our breakdown that we have here. One of the things that we do, and you already mentioned this, is we do it all pretty much in-house. Not even pretty much. We do it all in-house. So we have in-house control. Why is that a value to us? Because we've entertained lots of different ideas. We've explored how can we do this really effectively, but we have values that keep us in check. Why has that been a particular way to preserve our values?
You want to hit it on?
So over what specifically? Just like anything?
Just keeping everything in-house.
The fact that we don't outsource our any of our production.
Every drop of pineapple juice in your blush kombucha that you can order online was hand-pressed by Trevor Arsenault.
Hand-pressed.
The voice you hear.
Hand-pressed.
Like his hands.
He used his two hands with gloves.
With gloves.
No, that's too much.
They were probably double-gloved that day. It was probably
the pineapples were cut by yours truly, and they were pressed on a presser by Trevor.
Yeah.
And
but if it's the Kentucky Mule, which you can also order and get shipped directly to your door.
Link in the description.
Link in the description. If it's that was a particular labor of love because I shredded my hands that day.
That's true. More from you dropping a big thing of water than a...
But I still did it. We still...
Debatable. Just kidding.
You did most of it, but we both still... got through the that ginger,
and every can was seamed and filled by a canner that I loaded with cans.
Yep,
each can by my own hands, and Trevor labeled each one by him.
And weight checked and seam checked.
And Trevor put a label on them.
I did.
He did a good job.
And then you know how that labeler works. I did a great job.
That's true. it's like, and the starter culture, as Elijah said, was made here in house, has been fermented from starting, I'm guessing, a jar on your counter to a 500 gallon beast that sits in that is the crown jewel of our brewery. We don't get plastic totes filled with somebody else's quote unquote magic sent to our door.
We don't store it in plastic totes.
We don't store it in plastic. It doesn't leach plastic in it.
literally.
Or we have our hands on all the process that we can. Obviously, we're not out there farming and growing tea.
We're brewers.
we're not farmers. We're not growing tea and pineapples ourselves. But when it comes to putting things together, it's all put together here. If it's something you drink.
Well, why does that matter?
It matters to me because this is gross, man. I don't know what they're doing behind this. I mean, fair, anything you get, you don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but that's why we're being transparent of like, it's all made here. It's all a living product. It all is real. It's not, we're not just getting stuff and cutting corners. Like our price is the price for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's good. And it's high quality. It's better.
It's as high quality as you can get, pretty much.
Yeah.
We at least think so.
I mean, we didn't harvest glacier water from the Arctic, but...
Not this time.
And we also didn't...
Christmas batch.
We also didn't harvest glacier water from a company called Glacier Water. Like,
but we did make reverse osmosis water.
We made that water. We don't buy that water from anyone else either. That's filtered here in-house.
We bought a thing that made it.
Well, we did. But it's done here in-house.
Shout
it's
out.
It's still done in-house, though.
Shout out, Revitalife Pro. No, Easy Water. There we go. Shout out, Easy Water.
Shout out.
They make some good water filtration.
But yeah, basically just saying, like, we're real ones, and there's some fake ones out there, man. And, like, there's some people that are all about that business of making the plastic fake stuff. And I mean, I don't really care what people think about my opinions on that, but they're a little bit more embraced by the larger kombucha community than I like feel comfortable with them being a part of it for like basically enabling and empowering people to cut those corners. And it's one thing if there's label transparency and you're saying you're cutting a corner of fermentation by using...
That would be different.
By just shooting an acid into a batch of tea, like, that's fine, but they're trying to sell it as kombucha and it's just not. It's not fermented. It's fake. It's stupid. And the fact that they're treated like one of the kings of the industry for kombucha just drives me freaking crazy.
This is coming from a man that works. This is coming from a man that does it. This is
what I'm sitting here stressing out about supplying enough starter for the University of Kentucky, and Joe Schmo out here just started a kombucha company last week and just ordered two IBC totes of fake acid stuff, and they're going to be making quote-unquote kombucha next week.
How dare
Kick rocks.
They? The audacity.
They have some audacity.
Kick some rocks.
Yeah.
Kick some acid rocks.
I'm irritated. And I don't care what people think about that. If that hurt your feelings.
Well,
you can email me at Trey at ThriveBrewCo, and I will definitely not answer your email.
He'll forward it to me.
I'll forward it to Trevor.
And then Trevor will ask Trey, and then Trevor won't get back with you either. On that subject.
Because you don't want to hear what Trey said.
Probably not.
He'll curate it.
I was definitely expecting you to say the old email.
Yeah, I thought you were going to.
I will say, if you want to make soda, make soda. But if you want to make kombucha, you got to ferment it yourself.
Yep. Get it.
Words from the freaking brewmaster, baby.
I'm just saying, bro. If you're just putting acid into a finished product, that's what they do to make soda. Like, yeah, that ain't freaking
kombucha. You know, like we've sounded the alarm on here before. We just need some transparency. If that's your thing, then, you know, that's your thing. That's fine. But don't. We are about transparency. We've created an entire podcast to show the ins and outs of, we don't cut these corners. We're making this happen to the best of our possible abilities. We tagged our names to the process and the product. And so, just make real booch, people. Or just, how about this? Just drink good booch. Just drink real booch. Just like order it right to your door. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just like this delicious blueberry hops, test batch kombucha. Blueberries and citra hops brewed by the brewmaster himself that can be shipped directly to your door. And, you know, Trey, you're going to get a refill, but you can just listen in on this. You think the audacity of these acid blenders, what about the audacity of people that listen to this podcast that have never even ordered our kombucha to see if we're filled with a load of crap?
We're really doubling down on getting them to order our kombucha, aren't we? It's making us sound a little desperate.
No, but if you're ever interested in trying some of our stuff, you can get down in the link in the description down below. We have all of our flavors plus all of our test batch flavors that we literally craft in-house. All of these small test batches and one-off flavors that, you know, we'll just make for personal, you know, like just fun creations that we want to do, or, you know, partnerships or cool harvests that we get from local farmers, whatever. And we put up all those things on the web store to where you can order those directly to your house and try out some of these brews with us on the podcast. So it's kind of a cool little thing, way that we can connect from afar and share these brews that we talk so much about. It's pretty rad.
They slap.
Which one are you drinking on, Trey?
Blush.
Oh, baby.
It's a classic.
It's no meal, but it's pretty dang good.
So I guess my next question for you guys is, how does us maintaining in-house control, how does that affect our ability to steward the tasting experience, like the actual flavor of it?
Well, we're able to ensure product consistency as much as the ingredients allow us, so that we know, like, when we steep the mint for this long, we know it was that long because our hands touched it. We didn't outsource the production process and just hope with people that don't give two craps about that product. All they give a crap about is their paycheck and getting the stuff done.
Well, the other thing too is probably, you can probably notice it when you taste them back to back, because if you're going to go that route, you probably can't afford to have too robust of a flavor. That's my assumption.
There's another cut.
Well, You can't afford to have too robust of a flavor in order to mitigate inconsistencies.
That, and now for these companies that don't show face but outsource everything, they have extra cuts of the process. So there's no way they're going to be able to use as much per glass of ingredients as we'll be able to, because they have an extra cut on the process. Now they have to pay someone to, you know, create, brew the product, someone else to package the product, someone else to do, you know, blah, 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 you know, all these different parts, ship the product, you know, all those things. So they have extra cuts to the process. So they're going to, on your bottom line, on your statements, when you start looking at things, then you're going to look to your ingredients. How can we cut costs on the ingredients? And that's what always happens. And that's why when you taste like a can of our Kentucky Mule, it's going to jump out of that glass. Let me tell you, as soon as I was doing a sampling today with some people, and as soon as they took the first sip, they're like, this is a cocktail in the glass. I mean, we get that all the time with our flavors because we don't skimp on those ingredients. We don't skip on the fermentation time. We don't skip on the amounts and the process of infusing them into it, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyways.
Well, yeah, another thing about that too is with beverage industries, one route to be taken is the flavorist route, which is when you have a flavor idea and you actually submit that to a lab and the lab actually creates that flavor.
Yes.
They can come up with that flavor various ways, usually very strange chemicals. And that's the thing I think.
Natural flavors.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the things.
I wonder if there are kombuchas out there with natural flavors. I'm sure there are.
Yeah, I'm sure we've had some.
I can't remember.
Natural coconut.
Well, coconut extract.
Is that what it's called?
I don't remember.
It was something like that.
It tasted like natural.
It did. Yeah. It was like a natural flavor. Coconut, it was like a
coconut never
like,
tastes natural.
Like, you know, like a LaCroix coconut. That's what it tasted like, you know?
Yeah.
It's the natural flavors.
Dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if...
It's just not our thing.
If it makes you think of a Laffy Taffy, it's probably fake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another thing with us being able... With us keeping things in-house, and something that we aim at is letting the robustness of our flavor come from the natural ingredients, but yes, we put enough in there and we ferment it and we do everything we need to in order to actually make those flavors come out with being legitimately natural.
And here's the thing, and I just want to throw this out there, is like one of the beautiful parts about fermentation that those people that do that acid blend sodas, acid blended probiotic soda, that's what I'm going to call them.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. We're going to have to come up with a better catch name. But the one thing is they have to use artificially type things in that process, or like concentrated things, because there's no art of fermentation to unlock the flavors. Like if you've ever had kombucha where you put, like if you taste a fresh strawberry, and then you let it go through fermentation, the flavor is so now nuanced and explodes out of the glass after the chemical reactions of fermentation. Like it unlocks this whole other taste profile that if you just rush that process to a zero fermentation time, you're going to have to use more concentrated flavors. You're going to have to use concentrates, extracts, things like that to get the pop that you're looking for, because it's just going to be like a fruity soda thing, you know. Yeah. There's going to be no molding of the product together, which is something that we learned a long while back when we used to cold add flavors in. We didn't actually put a lot of the flavors through fermentation.
Big mistake.
Yeah.
Big difference. Huge difference.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it's just putting things through fermentation just unlocks a whole just explosion of flavor. So that's something we're really proud of with all of them.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that is really fun about us having a value for the transparency and having this is just so that we can talk about what we're doing. Other people can hear it because we're also proud of what we do. We're proud of the process that we undergo for it. And we want to actually share that because we're not trying to hide things. Also, one of the issues with us having these kinds of ideals, though, is the scalability of it all.
Yes.
And the problem with scalability is there's a tendency for quality to dip as things kind of grow a lot of times.
Yes.
So how are we pursuing maintaining quality or high quality while we're in pursuit of scaling?
I'll tell you what goes wrong for some people.
Go for
it. Some companies start dipping their toes in the IBC totes. They start getting that acid shipped to them in plastic, and then they use that instead of the culture they were relying on.
Oh, you mean they change?
They change.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just sucks.
Yeah.
And then
good.
Other people don't realize the need for a robust starter and knowing how strong and acidic your starter is. And also like not being able to, like, they try to ferment longer periods of time in bigger tanks, but those tanks are taller, so there's less oxygen, there's less movement. Look into vinegar production. Like, there's just like a lot of things people don't know.
So they're not as technically proficient in culture.
People
production.
Try to just kind of jump up the scale without realizing the science of what is happening on a smaller level. And that would help you understand what to do at a bigger level.
Yes. This is a sad reality. This is well before I was ever in kombucha business, ever thought that there was going to be a Thrive Kombucha. I can remember three specifically that went through this situation where I worked at Whole Foods for about 3 to 4 years before opening Thrive. And I would fall in love with these kombucha flavors. And I was just so interested because I was home brewing at this time, just so interested in the process. And sometimes they would come and there'd be vendors and like I'd get to chat it up with them and like connect with them. And it was so fun and everything. So then I'd start following them online, social media and stuff. And then you would see them post on social media about an expansion project. We're expanding the brewery. Expanding operations, blah, 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 to some degree or another. And I swear to you not, at least 3 to 4 of them that I was following and really loved their brews and was really into them. After that expansion project, exactly what Trey said. I mean, I didn't know at the time what was going on, how it was happening or whatever, but it was just like the product changed like on a dime. Like the quality of the product just went to complete watered down soda. And I was just like, what is going on? But it was directly correlated. And I didn't understand it at the time. But I want to say that I now, even if people's intentions, because I don't think that everyone's intentions are, let's just cut corners. I think a lot of people, it's having the wisdom and knowing the breakdown of the science of the brew and not thinking about other beverage processes when you're scaling your own thing up. And I think that people, even with the best intentions, just get the wrong equipment for the job. And our, you know, it's kind of funny like how we've freaked out on the back end when things are not going directly. I can even give sympathy to some of those companies. Like, I bet you their brewmasters on the back end were just completely freaking out. Like, what in the heck's going on, you know? When that was happening. At least that's me giving them the greatest benefit of the doubt.
Punching even themselves in the face.
Even you said the first big batch y'all did was like,
oh, yeah.
In that little 3-barrel
that's
tank.
Right.
And you were like, man, this is not good.
It lagged.
Like, it
so
did not.
So it was kind of crazy. Actually, it was worse than that because the first batch went great.
Okay.
That's right.
The
yeah,
first
yeah,
batch
yeah.
went, because we went from 5-gallon glass jars to 200. Gallon stainless.
I just imagine him there with Alex being like, yeah, baby, 150 gallons. Now imagine when there's 4 of those. That was probably what he said. And then the next time it didn't go good. Like, dude, what's up with this?
The first batch.
That's the Elijah thing.
Great.
What's up with this? What's up?
But he makes that furrowed brow.
You know what's horrible? You know what's actually funny you say that? The furrowed brow, you don't realize the things that you do until you have a child. And now
Aspen
has given
me that furrowed brow look.
Dude,
she gives it to me all the time.
She gives it to anything that she's just not sure about. She'll give that brow, and I'm like, it's like a mirror looking back at me. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I've got to keep a better smile face. Like, it's, anyways, kids, man. But the first of scaling up, I thought that it was just going to be this direct correlation. There was no information out there. We were still early in the business. Like, let's just scale up, baby. This much starter for this and that, this much water tea. Just up it and boom, new container. It worked perfect. And the first one went great, which is the worst. It's like hitting the lot. It's like winning $100 on your first lottery ticket.
It's like the first time I carbed 100 gallons of kombucha versus the second time when I didn't know about conditioning. We were like, why is the booch so flat? Like, it's not like,
oh,
it's
yeah,
barely carbed.
I remember
like,
that.
We were just like thrown. We had no idea.
Yeah. Yep. So scalability with keeping quality control is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly difficult without the right information.
Yeah. I think too, like looking at those two things of like one person goes to making more kombucha, but they get the wrong tank, so it loses that robustness, but they may or may not know about like the alcohol production side of things. The other side is either trying to hurry the process of like buying like other people's acids or whatever, is either trying to hurry the process to make more starter quicker, or they've been fooled and bamboozled into believing that you can't control your alcohol content.
Yes.
Which, we can. Our alcohol has been tested and it is below the legal limit. Still want the kombucha act to go through to up that limit, but can proudly say our kombucha meets the standard of below 0.5%. So don't let people try to fearmonger you into buying acids because of alcohol production, because it is possible. Just do a little research. Or pay me a lot of money. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It's like anything. You go in naive, and bit by bit, you learn how to do these things. And I couldn't be more proud of the process, the product, the end result. Now the process. I mean, there's always hard. I mean, we're brewers. There's a lot of hard work that's involved in the actual process of like. And when we're talking about just process, but even just the easeability now compared to a year and a half ago, just like better work environment, you know, just better mood as you're going through the process because of the things we've been able to implement. And yeah, there's always things that we want to do better and that we'll hopefully get better pieces of equipment that help us do that as we go on. But it's just even the workability of the process now is so much better, you know, with still having the pride of this is a freaking awesome product. You know what I mean? We didn't cut. It's not like there was no work and you are like, we just did all those things we said that we don't want to do to make that easeability of the process. It's like, no, we went the hardcore process of going to all those ideals, but yet the process is even a lot better today than it was a year ago. So yep. That's pretty cool too. What do we call that? We've talked about that in the past, just like making things as easy as possible without cutting the corners. We've talked about that in processes and things when we talked about our bottling line back in the day and things.
Streamlining?
Trevor's completely failing me right now.
I don't know what you're referring to.
It's okay. It doesn't matter. We've made the process better.
Yeah.
It's always proven.
I'm going to assume sustainability. Something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
So Trey took you to school yesterday.
Did he? Oh yeah, we went to the classroom. We went. Well, what would you call that? We whiteboarded.
I hate whiteboarding. Mainly because my neck hurts by the end of it. Yeah. I had to sit in the uncomfortable stools because we sold the really comfortable ones to Tyler Gilliland. And then I have to look up the whole time. So my neck's always like, ugh.
Which is ironic because you're the tallest one.
And I'm the tallest one, so I always have to write when there's something really high up there on the board. He's like, go ahead and write it, tall man.
Hey, it's the gift you've been given.
Yeah, we have an intense formula for four different parameters regarding making kombucha and the four calculations you need to make. Basically I have it all in my head, but it made no sense. It could make sense. It just could make more sense.
It made sense to Trey.
It made perfect sense to me. I was making great consistent kombucha.
No one else.
He was doing it.
I mean, I'm still going to make it like that because that's what works in my head.
He's never going to look at that whiteboard. He doesn't have to.
We made it in a way that we're about to create a Excel sheet / app where anyone that works here will be able just to figure out how to make kombucha and how much to put of our specific stuff based on different testing parameters and blah, blah, blah.
We're specifically streamlining the process because... Are we allowed to say that?
Say what? Yeah.
Trey's getting ready to have a baby.
Yeah.
And he's going to be out for a bit.
And I'm the only one that makes the products.
Yeah. Trey's the brewmaster now. So we got, you know, on the back end, we're getting some things figured out so that this guy can step away for a bit.
Also, in the future, it's just like in a business, eventually there's more than just one person brewing. Like, you have like you look at any coffee roastery, right, Trev? Like, it always starts with one roaster, but when you get to the size of Onyx Coffee, you've got, like, 7-8 roasters that are all making, that follow a direct formula to make whatever specific coffee, whatever specific roast profile.
Yeah, as the demand increases.
We need it to be able, we need...
Plug and play, baby.
We need to be plug and play. Where you just need to know the practice of making kombucha and the basics of working in a brewery, and then you'll be rocking and rolling.
It's pretty sick. One of my good buddies is he's getting his PhD in mathematics at UK, and he's going to help us actually create the jumbled... Well, he's going to take the jumbled whiteboard and help us create a formula, and then we're going to hopefully go to an app developer and get the app. It's pretty cool. It's exciting stuff.
Yeah,
it's
super cool. He kept saying, like, oh, man, it's going to be pretty complicated. I was like, dude, if he's a mathematician getting a PhD, this is going to be probably pretty basic for him. Like, he's going to look at this and be like, you need help with this? More than likely.
Maybe.
Nah, it'll be cool.
It's cool.
I mean, it's one of those things that's, like, low-key a moneymaker. Like, it's what's going to last in the company for... It's going to be a legacy. It's going to be a legacy that I left.
It's a legacy piece.
I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
It's taken a long time.
It was my baby. It was very stressful to figure out, too, but once we got it...
That's what makes it rewarding.
We just had to figure out the parameters we wanted, though. That was the main thing. Like, how acidic do we want our kombucha to be? How sweet do we always want it to be? So...
Yeah. It's been fun.
We have a really low sugar content, too, which I'm pretty proud of.
Heck yeah. With a bouquet of flavor.
Yeah.
Anyhow. We're proud of the process. We set ourselves certain ideals. And we really stick to them. We started this podcast to be able to display that fact. That we're long form talking here. And if you try some kombucha, you would see it. You would be able to see it. Order it right to your house, baby. But we're proud of the process. We are sticking to our guns and our ideals, and we are continually on this podcast, on the social media, on our interactions with people, just displaying our passion for brewing and specifically the highest quality, just best tasting kombucha that we can possibly brew up. And so hopefully throughout this podcast episode, you've just got a little bit of the passion and the process. You know?
And I hope you got a lot of the hate. You know who you are. You probably don't listen to this, but...
No. You can relay it back to him.
Someone's going to send it to him.
Anything else, guys?
Someone's going to DM me. I was listening to the podcast and I just, you know, I just don't agree with that. I'd be like, I don't care, man.
I'm making it.
I just work here.
Yeah, Trey just works here.
I just work here.
You guys got anything else? Cool. Well, we hope you guys enjoy this episode from the Thrive Brew Kombucha Podcast. We really appreciate a 5-star review. We are trying to spread the knowledge and awareness of high quality, delicious, crushable kombucha to the kombucha community and beyond, trying to bring as many people into this as possible. We want to fight the stupid soda industry and get people on amazingly fermented, low sugar beverages. We think it's going to be better for everybody. So one way you can help, really simply, is just leave us a 5-star review. A few words would be sick too. If you want some more behind the scenes content, join our Patreon. We post up pictures from episodes, things we mention in the process. We'll probably like post up some back behind the scenes videos or something this week, like from like parts of the process that we mentioned throughout this. So if you want some behind the scenes content, join the Patreon, link down in the description.
Maybe you'll see my face.
Maybe.
Probably not. I don't want you to.
You gotta pay for that.
Yeah.
If you would love to try some of this clean crushable kombucha, you can order it nationwide. We don't ship outside the country. Should make that differentiation. But we can ship any of our test batch, core flavors, anything right to your door. So check the link down in the description. We've got our core flavors on there, which are... Don't just look over those. Just because of the cores, that means that they are the ones that have risen to the top.
That means they're the goats.
They're the goats.
They make us a lot of money. Specifically.
They're the ones that we put the most attention to.
Yeah.
So don't just... I know it's easy to just look over the cores and just go for the test batch stuff. But get some of those cores. Kentucky Mules are pride and joy.
Don't sleep on the pepper one either.
Dude, don't sleep. Absolutely not. We get... there's a cult fan base for the peppers.
There really is, yeah. But that's that's a rare one.
It is.
Because we don't can that one.
Nope. We don't take it to any markets, nothing. So yeah. Super. Give that one a try. We are distributing regionally.
Let me interrupt that real quick. Back to the pepper, because Trey's giving pineapple jalapeno some hate. The more people order...
Oh, it isn't giving it hate.
No? The pepper line?
What about the pepper line?
All right. All I was gonna say is the more people that drink the pineapple jalapeno, the quicker we can get to honey cayenne or mango tahine.
That's true.
Oh, we can make honey cayenne? That flavor slaps.
We could.
What's her name from across the street? Every time she comes in on Saturday for a brew, who works over at the Breeze? Our friend? From the coffee. She watches
Phoebe.
Your dog.
Talking about
Phoebe.
Yeah. Every time she comes in.
Yeah.
Freaking pineapple jalapeno. No. I'm sorry. Honey cayenne.
Ask about it.
She's always
so good.
Are you guys going to make the honey cayenne? When are you guys going to make the honey cayenne? Every single time I see her.
Yeah.
So it's...
I drank so much of that.
Yeah,
flavor.
It was good.
Oh my God.
So anyways, we're just saying the pepper line, don't overlook it. You know, it's delicious.
Order some so I can make some more honey cayenne, please.
If you got any further questions, email them to info@thrivebrewco.com. info@thrivebrewco.com.
And if you have any hate mail, make sure to email trey@thrivebrewco.com. I will make sure to roast you back or ignore you.
Don't listen to a word he says. He's just a brewmaster coming away from a hard week. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. We hope that you've gained some value, insight, and behind-the-scenes content to our process, our differentiators, and our passion. We appreciate you, and we will catch you next time. Cheers, y'all.